Welcome to the Early Childhood Community Development Center's podcast. Today, we're looking at MAST educators and the many ways they support children. You can connect with us via our social media to share your thoughts and ideas. We are excited today to welcome three guests. We have Joanne Jansen from North End Cooperative Preschool, Jen Havens and Brenda Steele from Fort Erie Regional Child Care Center. As we move through our conversation today, thinking about how things look a little different, wearing masks, personal protective equipment, and finding those new and creative ways to support children that educators are working with. How are we looking at and engaging children when thinking about their language and literacy skills? Understanding and reading body language, tone of voice, those ideas of sensory experiences to continue building on their strengths. Come on in and join us to see what this looks like. So we are excited to have Joanne Jansen, the supervisor of North End Cooperative Preschool, joining us for our third podcast. And we're going to be looking at and having conversation around MAST educators and the many ways they support children. So welcome, Joanne.
Thank you for having me.
Excited to hear all your thoughts and ideas as you've moved through this unusual and unique time. We're thinking, first of all, about the ways in which COVID and the implementation of PPE may have impacted the work that you do. Is there something you would like to share around those ideas?
Sure. Around as far as the impact of actual PPE, prior to opening in September, because we're open from September to June, we sent families a welcome letter, which we do anyway. But this time it included photos of the staff wearing a mask and not wearing a mask so that the children could easily identify what we would look like. We also have all the staff wearing photos around their neck, so without a mask. So when we are masked in the classroom, the children still get to see what we look like without a mask.
Oh, wonderful.
We also sent the social story that I found on the internet. My teacher is wearing a mask, and we sent that home, that link home for parents to read to their child prior to attending so that there would be no surprises that this is what we would be doing. And that same social story is on our bookshelf in the classroom for the children to access during free play and has been there since the beginning of the year. So we often see what the children will go over there and they'll go, there's Mrs. Jansen without a mask. There's Mrs. Jansen with a mask. So they do refer to that social story. To them, I think it's been really, it's just common for them now. Like it hasn't seemed to upset the children at all seeing us in PPE, because we were concerned about that at first, but it's not had an impact on them at all. They're just used to us being that way. We have also switched from face shields to goggles. We found that the face shields were impeding our ability to get close enough to the children, especially if you had to console a little one, because the face shield would hit them just at the wrong spot because of the length of the face shield and their height. So the goggles work much better for us. So we have switched to goggles. I think the one thing that it really has impacted, though, for us as educators is to be able to model those language skills, as children cannot see the way our mouths are moving. And we have several children that are in speech therapy, and usually we try to, of course, work along with the speech therapist, and that's been really, really challenging because we can't show them the way that our mouth is moving because we have a mask on. But that has been, I think, the biggest challenge with the mask.
Sounds like some problem solving with the goggles, the face shield, and learning as you go and supporting the children.
Yeah, for sure. I think we have definitely learned as we go. And as far as like the PPE part of it, but COVID itself has also, given us some challenges that have made us have to think creatively. I have found that dramatic play, used to be, you just think about bringing out costumes if we're doing an airport, or having those soft babies, or, blankets and doll clothes and that sort of thing would always be in there. And of course, we can't have those things. So we've had to think a little bit differently about what we want to put in dramatic play, but our team has come up with some really, really great ideas. This month, we're actually talking about Arctic animals and snow and ice and that sort of thing. So we have set up a little box that we covered in paper, white paper, and we're going ice fishing in dramatic play. So, and then we have a little cafe that we set up with little menus that they can check off. Because then when they come in, they're going to want hot chocolate and they're going to want things to warm up. You just have to think a little bit more creatively than we used to do, but there's certainly lots of ways to still do dramatic play in a fun way the kids are loving the ice fishing, actually, with the magnetic fishing pole and fish that are inside the box. And you just have to think about it a little bit differently than we did prior to COVID.
And again, it sounds as though you've had some time to consider some ways. And again, it is taking that time, which is an interesting journey to think about how you're incorporating things, how it is taking a little bit longer to figure things out. However, it sounds like your children are having a great time with the traumatic play through that outside of the box thinking. So thinking about, I know you are a small team at the preschool and work hand in hand with the families, thinking about different strategies that you and your team have implemented, linking back to that idea of language and building language and literacy skills, or that idea of reading body language. Are there strategies that you can share with us?
Language and literacy, you know, as far as I feel and our team feels, is that it's in everything that we do, and the more natural it occurs, the better. But there is intent in everything that we place in the room. So there are multiple ways for the children to use them. So that offers us multiple opportunities to engage in literacy, as do the provocations that are set out. So the playroom, one of the things we do is our playroom is labeled with photos and words. So it helps the children identify things like a shelf or a chair or the window because it's got the word on it. And then all of our toys have got photos so that they know where the toys are supposed to go when they're done, but it also might have like the word with that photo. So that's one of the ways that we introduce some of the literacy in the room. We also expose the children to alphabet sounds and letter building. So we use Jolly Phonics jingles, which they love, can put the CD on so they can listen to the CD. And we also have curves and sticks that we put on our magnet board so that we can actually build the letter together. You know, if you're doing the letter A, how many sticks do we need to make the letter A? Do we need a long stick? Do we need a short stick? Which way do our sticks go on the board? So we use that for our language and literacy as well. We also have a little crocodile that we made out of a box, and his mouth opens up, and we put objects inside depending on the letter that we're doing. So the children do this little chant, crocodile, crocodile down by the lake. I'm going to reach in and see what you ate. So we've got all these objects inside, and then they pull one out, and they all get a turn. And then, you know, what sound does that make? And what does it start with? So it's really good for the beginning sounds of their objects. And if we're doing, for instance, the letter A, and we have children whose names start with the letter A, they also go inside the crocodile, get really, really excited when, you know, that's me. And starts with A, like Arthur starts with A. We do that every single day. We do have circle time, and the kids are really, really excited to come to circle every day just to see what the crocodile ate. And when we try to skip it, they tell us like, but we have to do the crocodiles. And I have even noticed that then during free play, that those curves and sticks are left out all morning on the magnet board, you will often see a child that's recreating a letter that we're learning. And they'll go up and they'll now be the one teaching their friends, this is how we do it. Or they'll come over and say, look, I made the letter H. Come and see, I made the letter H. So just having those parts in the room available for them just reinforces what they're learning during circle time for their building their language and literacy skills. We also use name plates, the child's name and photo, so they get to recognize their name. And eventually we remove the photo, so it's just their name on the name plate. And some of them are at that spot now where they can just recognize their name. They don't need their photo. And we often use those at snack time. So we'll put them out at the table and they have to go find their picture and their name to know where they're going to sit at snack time. And we also use snack time as an opportunity to allow the children to engage in just everyday conversations, whether it's with their peers or the teachers. And that's often where we get a lot of them retelling us about events that have happened to them. It really lends to open-ended questions that we can, you know, ask them about something they're talking about. And that's just another example of just finding words naturally. It's also a time like we can make casual comments like, oh, the carrot is so crunchy. And then we just don't say anything. And then before you know it, inevitably another child's going to comment on the carrots, or they're going to comment about, oh, I don't like carrots, or yes, it is crunchy. So we're, you know, just everyday conversation. It's really, really important for building those language and literacy skills. And as far as the body language, I find that in spite of wearing our masks and goggles, that the children can still read the expression in your eyes. They're a lot smarter than we give them credit for. And they know by the way you're holding your body or the tone in your voice, they know whether you're happy, whether you're sad, whether you're a little, you know, upset. So I will say, though, this year has made us much more aware of the way we communicate through our body language. Children can definitely communicate through body language, and we communicate a lot of information to them through body language as well. So that's just some of the ways that we build language and literacy here.
Amazing. You've highlighted the idea of that being more aware and the intent in everything you do, that why of what you're doing. And with your alligator that you share with the children, I was thinking about how that supports all the different learning styles. So you have the auditory, the visual, and the kinesthetic learners all covered within that one experience, which is absolutely amazing. So all those children are taking something away. It's wonderful. The other thought is sensory experiences. And how have you offered those to engage families, children within the setting?
You have to think outside the box with sensory, because, you know, we're always used to having our large, you know, sensory table and our water yes. table, and those both are removed from the room this year. So this year we have individual sensory bins for each child, and we change them up depending on the children's interest, usually about a monthly basis, sometimes every 2 weeks, depending on whether they're still, you know, showing interest in what's in the sensory bin. So like right now, as I mentioned, we're talking about Arctic animals. So all of the sensory bins have fake snow and animals inside. So they can take those to the table. And again, each one is labeled with their name. So it's been really great for name recognition, because they have to go to the shelf and find their sensory box with their name, bring it to the table. And it's just been amazing how well they have responded to these individual sensory bins. So they still take them. They might be sitting at a table beside a child that's got one at their table, and they will talk about it, or they'll just engage with by themselves for a while. Because we're talking about Arctic animals, the children were inquiring about the sounds that the animals they had in their bin might make. And then just to extend that, you know, you use YouTube or technology, and we instantly look up the sound the animal makes, and that has led to some really interesting discussions. So, I mean, everything kind of ties together, right? Whether you're doing sensory, I mean, there's another opportunity for language building. The individual sensory bins have really, really worked out well. We've done lots of different things in our bins already this year. The only challenge with that is sometimes you don't have enough materials. We had lots of animals, thankfully, but, you know, I don't know if all centers would be able to fill. Like, we have 32 sensory bins we have to fill. So you have to have a lot of material in order to fill them so that each child has their own. But we've been able to do that. We also have individual Play-Doh that's labeled so that they only use their own Play-Doh, nobody else's. But we've extended that play with things like Play-Doh mats that are easy to disinfect, because they're just been laminated or whatever. So after a child's played with it, it's easy to wipe down to let another child use them. And we have multiple sets anyway. And same with like the actual Play-Doh utensils. We have three separate buckets of them, so that if they want to do Play-Doh, they can take their Play-Doh and then take one of those sets and go to the table. And then when they're done, they know that they have to go put it in the red bin, which is where it has to be cleaned before another person can use it. That's been really great too. They love their individual Play-Doh, because they didn't want to take Play-Doh away from them, because it's such a great thing that for sensory as well. And because we can't do it that big bin, we've also been focusing on a sensory-based art activity at least once per week. So this week we painted with shaving cream and glue, as we were talking about the snowstorm. And rather than use a paintbrush, the children used their hands and they created their own blizzards on black paper. So it's very sensory. They loved it. There's lots of ways to do sensory, even if we can't have our sensory table. And fortunately, we also have the naturalized playground, which affords us the opportunity to engage in sensory play outdoors. So the children are still able to use the sand pit. They're able to use our pea gravel area, and then, you know, just the natural items. So whether it's building, you know, snow blocks in the snow right now, or when we didn't have snow, like breaking the leaves and just using the leaves as sensory. So I don't know, it's, you know, at first I thought, oh, what are we going to do about not being able to have sensory? But when you really start to think about it, there are so many things that you can incorporate sensory through. So that's what we're doing.
And sometimes we get into that routine of what we do. So this is an opportunity, it sounds like, to rethink what that routine was. And it sounds as though you've really considered the interests of the children, considering the importance of having sensory for children for that self-regulation. You layered in and spoke about the idea of literacy is happening. And I know that you have a fantastic naturalized play space. So the opportunity to use that for them to continue to explore. Wonderful. And last question I have for you, thinking about what are your learnings of best practices as you are supporting children through the pandemic?
Well, I think when you support the families in your program, you're actually supporting the children in your program. So to that end, what we're doing right now is offering weekly activities that correspond with what we're doing in the classroom and send it home to each family. We currently actually have a few families that are choosing to stay away during the stay-at-home orders, even though we're open. So this way they still get to participate and they know everything that we're doing in the classroom, and we're sending links for parents so that they can actually recreate some of those things at home for their children. So that's one of the ways that we're supporting them. At the end of each month, we're also sending home photo documentation for families because, of course, they can't come in. So there's no parent volunteers, so they don't get to see what's really happening. And we always did photo documentation, and we've displayed it in the classroom and then transferred it to our binder, Making Learning Visible, which parents would have access to. So since they don't have access to that, we're sending this home once per month. So all the documentation, we still put it up on the walls because the children still love to see what we're doing and re-talk about, you know, I remember when I did this, or they'd love to see their pictures up there. So that's still happening. But in addition to that, we're sending it home for the parents. And the parents have really, like, we've gotten a lot of really positive responses from the parents. They're really appreciative that they get to see what their children are doing, even though they're not able to come in themselves. So that's another way we've been supporting families, as well as, you know, our regular monthly newsletter and calendar. But this is something just over and above that. And when we were shut down in the spring, we actually offered circle time through Zoom to keep families connected. And at that time, we also sent home activities that the children could complete prior to doing circle time. And then they got to share their completed, whether it was a worksheet or something we were building, or they would have time then on Zoom to share with their friends. So that's an easy way to also support children, especially if we can't be in class during the pandemic. We also created last year, when we were shut down, a scrapbook. So I encouraged parents to send back to us things that children were doing at home because they couldn't be at preschool. And then we put together what we did during COVID, and we've created a scrapbook. So those are some of the ways that we've been supporting our children. We're also practicing right now for our annual Hopathon, which is a fundraiser, which is a little bit challenging during COVID times. But we are planning to use Zoom to allow the parents to view the children during the Hopathon. Usually they're allowed to come in, but since they can't attend in person, we're going to do a Zoom, and they can watch their children through Zoom. The children are still going to be very, very excited to be doing the Hopathon. And it's one of the ways that, being a co-op, that families have to support us through the fundraising. We also did a Zoom link at Christmas. We still did a little Christmas concert. It wasn't the same as usual, but we still implemented a little Christmas concert for them. And the children learned some songs with the CDs, and we used Zoom, and the parents loved that too. So that's some of the ways that we are trying to support families and children through the pandemic.
Amazing. And it sounds as though it's also been a journey for you with the idea of technology, doing the Zoom, staying connected, and ensuring that belonging is still happening with families by including those that may not be in the classroom right now, that they are still receiving the activities and extending the learning as well. So moving from the program to home for the children to take those with them, and the documentation to be able to view that so that parents can see what's happening in the classroom, even though they're not able to be in. So it really seems to incorporate all those foundations of how does learning happen, belonging, well-being, engagement, expression, as part of that best practice, from what I'm hearing of your sharing. So it's amazing. Anything else that you would like to share, thoughts, ideas from your journey?
I think, like you said, it's just made us having to come together as a team and to really think outside the box. So come up with more creative ideas that maybe we wouldn't have done in the past. And actually, it's been fun to be able to think outside of the box, because you can get into a rut by doing the same things over and over. And this has made us not be able to do that. So, and also this year, one of the new things for me is that I have more staff because of not having, you can't mix cohorts. So usually there's two staff at North End Cooperative Preschool. And this year there's four staff. So, you know, that's different as well. But it's also great because we're getting more ideas and more input. And I guess that's all really I would have to add.
Thank you very much, Joanne, for joining us today for our podcast. Looking forward to sharing this out to everybody, all your amazing ideas. And thank you to you and your team for sharing everything with us today.
Thank you, Patricia. Thanks for having us.
So our next guests are Jen Havens, Lead RECE with Fort Erie Regional Child Care Center, and Brenda Steele, Supervisor of Fort Erie Regional Child Care Center. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
We are excited to have you here to have a conversation around our podcast about masked educators and the many ways that they are supporting children. Thinking about the ways in which the implementation of PPE has impacted the work that you or your team has done. Is there anything that you'd like to share around that idea?
How it's impacted, I'm going to say in the very beginning, it was difficult for some staff. We had adjustment periods, of course, you know, going from doing emergency childcare to wearing no masks to going to regular care and having the expectation of wearing a medical mask and eye protection. So, you know, through trial and error, we tried the goggles, which were very heavy, caused some issues with headache, vision, and then the other thing was the shields were, some of them were really tight and they were causing headaches as well. So what we did is we reached out to our corporate health and safety representative. He was able to give us some recommendations of appropriate eyewear that we could use. So we went with safety glasses, and it was a huge change for the staff. I mean, they were able to do their job. I mean, the only issue with the safety glasses is sometimes they would fog up, no different than somebody who wears regular, you know, glasses. So we corrected that a little bit with using some methods that we, you know, we did some research, did some methods such as putting a little bit of shaving cream on there. And some people do the Band-Aid over top of the mask over their nose, and it prevents the steam from going up. So yeah, so we kind of just worked it all out through that. The educators have been delighted to have that appropriate eyewear and be able to do their job not having any issues.
Yeah, the eyewear really made a difference for our staff to be able to work and continue to be able to see the children, because the other ones were falling down and they were constantly adjusting them, fogging up much more than these ones. It just made that already stressful job even more so. So being able to find those glasses was amazing and a really big difference for us in terms of going from that adjustment and learning curve to this is now part of our daily life and it's manageable now.
There was a lot of stresses and anxieties that definitely went down with the staff, you know, in this heightened time of, you know, COVID. So it was very successful when we did that.
Amazing. And it links into the well-being within how does learning happen, considering how you're supporting the educators in that well-being. And it is a process. And I think you've highlighted that everybody is going through trying to figure out what works. And it's wonderful that you found a solution that works for your team.
And even now, sometimes you can see staff on certain days, they might choose to wear the goggles and then other days they choose to wear the shield. So I think having multiple options really helps too. Days that my eyesight isn't great and I want to wear my glasses, I can put a shield on over top because I don't like the big glasses that go over top. The shield works better because then I can wear the shield, the mask, and the glasses, and it's a little bit more manageable.
Definitely great to have options.
Yes.
And thinking about how to move forward. So thinking about different strategies that you and your team may have implemented to build the idea of language and literacy skills, as well as with faces covered, the idea of reading body language.
I have to admit, this was a huge concern for our staff. We have a lot of children with ISPs that are directly related to speech and language development. So this was very high on our radar for us. And I think the staff have done amazing of touching base with their communities of practice and doing some research on ways that we can still support language development. And I know myself and some of the other staff, we've been using like the old clap method, like watermelon, and getting those syllables in. So and really slowing down our language so that those children, although they can't see our mouth, we're really slowing down so they can grasp the syllables and repeat each syllable on its own to develop the word. Brenda, I don't know if you were having some other ideas or observations that you've seen staff doing as well.
Oh, yes, for sure. So I often see the smiling eyes, you know, you can see the smiles, you know, under the mat. So we've kind of changed our focus a little bit to that. So we're, you know, trying to show those smiling eyes. And we've also incorporated some for literacy and that kind of stuff. Jen actually did a story that she read over Christmas time. She dressed up as Santa and she read a story to the children. Oh, and then we showed it to the children through an iPad. So that was something special that we did through, you know, our Christmas holidays. And yeah, it was amazing for the kids too.
And I had fun doing it. Yeah. I think I might have enjoyed it more than the children because it was my favorite story. And sometimes because I'm not on the floor as much, I don't get to do those things and interact. But it was such a great experience for me too. And just being able to support that development, it held a little special place in my heart as well to be able to connect with the children and families in that way.
Definitely. And it sounds like the idea of bringing joy, that opportunity to express. So finding different ways that we can express ourselves without that verbal language. And also thinking of that story as that media literacy that you're including in children's lives.
Yeah,
so again, sure. That other layer of literacy that they can explore.
And it was cute because then the book that I read on the video, we then placed those books in the classroom. So you could see the kids mimicking some of the actions and dramatizations that I did in the video. You could see them doing it in the classroom. So you could really see, although the speech and language was a huge concern in the beginning, that children are really picking up on those things and they're really accepting and learning through the other ways that we've come up with to support that development.
It sounds like it's been adapted into daily practice.
Yeah.
So you've worked through that and now it's just part of that, what you do, which is amazing.
Right. And the staff do remove their masks when they eat lunch with the children and they have to social distance as well. So when they remove it. So they're still within the 6 feet, but at least that some time that they can model for the children the speech and they can see the mouth movement and, you know, really help their language along and engagement at the lunch table, but with social distancing.
Yes. And again, considering all those parameters that we're working within and how can we use those parameters to move ourselves forward, thinking about that.
And I even feel like some of our relationship building that we're doing with the kids have even increased even more because we don't have the ability to show our expressions through our face and our mouth, that we're doing it in other ways, like with other body language, using our hands and using our arms and getting more down with the children at their level so that although they can't see our face, they're still seeing the acceptance in our body language. And I feel like it's made a difference even just in the ways that we build relationships.
And that well-being that you're creating by those relationships and that belonging for children coming into your program. It's amazing.
And I was saying, like, some of these kids don't know what we look like without a mask. But some of the kids in our toddler room or the children in our toddler room, some of them are only 16 months. And we've been at this for almost a year now. So they don't know childcare without masks. They don't know grocery stores without masks.
Right.
So it's already a part of their daily lives. And they only know that when they're at home, their parents or their guardians don't have masks on. But then as soon as they leave the house, we have masks. So it's almost like it's part of their everyday life at this point.
Yes. Definitely. It's their new norm, as we keep hearing. I think that's the term of 2020, the new normal.
The new norm. Some of these new norms, I hope that we continue to do post-COVID.
Yes. And again, we've heard from a lot of educators that it's prompted them to think outside of the box, to challenge the routine that they've gotten into. So it's wonderful to hear that thinking that's taking place, that reflecting that's taking place, to see how can we do this differently, to still support and still provide that quality care with children. So,
yeah.
And thinking on that, ideas of sensory experiences for engaging children and families, what have you explored with the idea of sensory?
We've actually done a lot of different things around sensory. We have some individual days that we do Play-Doh play, and it's just individualized. It's just for that child for that day. And, you know, we may try and do it like on a Friday so that we can send that home with the children. They can engage with it with their parents on the weekend. So kind of like, you know, connecting activities from the childcare center to home. The other thing that we've been doing is some individual water play. So we set up some individual bins and let the children play in it individually, and then that gets washed and disinfected, and then the next child gets to use the water play. And usually they try and do a couple individual bins so that, you know, nobody's being left out, you know, depending on what the age of the child is. So we try and make it accommodating, and, you know, it's well observed, so supervised, so that nobody, you know, intermingles with each other's water play. The other thing that we've done is we actually found some like dish gravel, that's something that we could disinfect very easily to provide that filling and dumping sensory.
And it comes in so many different colors and sizes that you're able to buy. Like, we have some that look like natural rocks, and the children have been playing with those. And then we have like the other bright colored ones. So we're able to mix that up. Even though it's the same resource, it's providing different experiences.
And the opportunity to extend the learning that they've had at the center into home links into the idea of engagement with the families, which is wonderful.
Yes, for sure.
And the opportunity to explore. So again, you found ways to continue that inquiry and exploration for children.
Some of the old things that we've always done before are being just implemented a little bit more, like the sensory bags where you have the hair gel and the water in there. But even with that, they're becoming more creative. They've made almost like sensory walls, and they put them in the shape of Christmas trees or snowmen or things that the children are interested. The one group was really interested in airplanes, so there was one in the shape of an airplane. And then we've done things like individual sensory bottles, where we've been collecting some of the water bottles from home, and so children are able to build those here and then bring them home with them, and they're easily disinfected. We provide like little wooden bowls with all the items that they might need or want to put in there individually, and then they can choose what they want to go in there. Some of them had pine needles in there, some of them had rice in there. So it's still allowing the children to have that control over their own learning and use their own resources and still add loose part to our emergent practices and be able to do it in a safe way because they're bringing it home once they're done here.
And thinking about that piece of, you highlighted children's choice, their interest. So you're still meeting children's interests, and in a way that, again, working within the parameters that have been set. This is wonderful. And thinking about through this, as Jen, you said, we've been almost at this almost a whole year now, learnings of best practices that and supporting children through the pandemic. Are there tips or tricks or ideas that you would like to share about that?
There's been so many great things that are happening. It's hard to think about all the things that we do to support them and all the things that we've learned in such a short amount of time. The staff have been really amazing at coming up with ways to find things that still fit into our emergent philosophy, but that are easily disinfected and that aren't going to pose any sort of risk in terms of spreading virus if something happens to come in. We've been doing a lot of provocations with, like, one of our staff got some MacTac that has like a rock pattern on it. And so she's put that on the table and there's a dinosaur provocation on top of it. So doing those things so that the table or the surface can still be sprayed and wiped down and disinfected, all of those things. We've used some artificial turf because it's plastic. It can be steam cleaned. It can be disinfected. It can soap and water, all of those things that we need to do. We've learned to put our documentation in the protective binder sleeves so that we can hang them on the wall and they're easily interchanged when new documentation is done.
We've been displaying those in the front screening area for the parents. If, you know, they do happen to come in, you know, it's the weather's getting cold, so they might just come right into the front doorway there, you know, when they receive their children. We just display it there for them and, you know, gives them a sense of what's happening in the playroom. And we're also giving them documentation to take home with them So, you know, whatever happens, if it's an individual on their individual doc on their child, they'll send it home with them so they can look at it at home.
Yeah, keeping that connection with what's happening very in the center important. So they feel that they still are a belonging and part of the center.
Yes,
and
very
it sounds
important.
Like the team is flipping that can't to can. Right?
Yes, very much
focusing.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Some huge
and even
changes.
I'm currently working on a project right now where I'm developing a bulletin board for that front vestibule as well. And I've taken some pictures of the early learning environment and then all of the staff, and then I'm going to post them up there. So because our parents don't get to come in, they don't know what the children's learning environments look. They can see a little bit like our front foyer and those sorts of things, but they don't actually know where they spend their time. And so we're really working on, and some of them, when they start, they've never met the educator in that room. So yes. The RECEs aren't always getting a chance to connect too. So we've really been trying that when new children start, that we're giving those educators an opportunity to come out and meet the parent, introduce themselves, talk about some of the things that are happening in the classroom, interests and those sort of things, just to have that personal connection that we're missing. So to us, that's an important step in that process, in the enrollment process, is giving our staff and our parents time to meet each other. Because at the end of the day, it's our screener that is usually going to get the children and bringing them to the parent. So they don't always get to hear those end of day triumphs and things from the staff. So we're really trying to make the communication piece also streamlined so that it's going and getting to the parents as well. So documentation really helps with that as well. Lots of outdoor time. Even though it's been cold, the kids have really been having a great time out in the snow and on toboggans. And I think even the staff are enjoying it.
No such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing, getting outside and that fresh air for their mental health.
Oh, exactly.
So amazing.
Yesterday, I was bringing a group in and the kids actually cried because they didn't want to come in.
You know, they're having a good time when.
Yes, yeah. That's one of the other things that we've had to sort of work around too, is shared playgrounds.
Yeah.
So making sure that we have enough time for both of the preschool groups to get in there, and we're sanitizing in between.
Figuring it all out. What's that new routine? Anything else that you'd like to share from your journey?
It really has been a journey. That's a great word to use. I really like that word because it has. And that's all a part of who we are as educators, is to keep that journey going. This year, our journey was about COVID and masks and PPE and disinfecting and logging and documenting all the disinfecting. And those aren't things that are usually a part of our journey, but it really has sort of opened our eyes and made us more acceptable to some of those things. Because in the beginning, like Brenda said, it was, we had anxiety about it. What is this going to look like? How is it going to affect our jobs? How is it going to affect our ability to give the best that we can to these children and their families? Through this journey and using our communities of practice, relying on each other, sharing ideas, we really have bonded together to make this environment a very loving and welcoming environment. The children and families, they are so appreciative of what's happening and going on here, that it's been a great journey. Stressful at times, but I think it's been a great journey. Lots of learning that's happened, and you can see how the staff are supporting each other too.
So again, supporting, lifting each other up, and that idea of that well-being together.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Jen and Brenda. We appreciate all these amazing ideas and thoughts and sharing your journey today with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
I'd like to say a big thank you to our guests for joining us today and sharing their thoughts and ideas and the way that they've been supporting children while all being masked educators. Look forward to connecting again with you in March when we look at how to cultivate a culture for learning in challenging times. Please stay safe, stay healthy,